You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Steven.
And I'm Brett.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We are all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
And we are so proud to be members of the Broadway Podcast Network. Check out broadwaypodcastnetwork.com/Broadway Husbands to see all the amazing things they're doing for the Broadway community at this time. And we have this amazing couple, Ann Steele and Kelly Carpenter. Sorry, I just got a little something there in my throat. Go. I'm so excited to have you here.
We're excited to be here. Do you know that 27 is Ann's lucky number?
Ooh.
Seriously, it is.
This is your luckiest podcast.
This is the luckiest podcast ever.
Now, for those people who are listening who don't know you, you have this amazing podcast called I Love My Wife. Can you tell us more about your podcast and what it is you both do?
Why don't you talk about the podcast? Well, about 3 years ago, right?
Yes.
We're on episode 124. So
I know, right?
We're oldies in this podcast world. But about 3 years ago, we were approached by Derek and Romaine, who were mainstays from Sirius Out Q. And when that sort of folded, they went and started this whole sort of podcast empire. And they asked if we would test do a podcast, and we both sort of laughed and thought it would be a silly, crazy idea. And we tragically did our first one, but they seemed to like it. And here we are 3 years later, and our podcast really covers sort of just what our lives are. Ann is about singing and music, and mine is about travel. We have four kids, and so that mixes into our podcast. And we mostly keep it pretty light. Like, you know, the world is sort of a heavy place right now, and we try to talk more about relationships and family and travel and music and just sort of our day-to-day lives, and which are normal but crazy all at the same time. So we sort of, you know, keep that and as a mainstay in our podcast. And we also have a guest on every one of our podcasts that range from comics to singers to political activists to authors to just anybody that's sort of interesting to us.
Well, you guys were guests, so
yes,
you know
to
that.
Us. Yes.
Yes, we were. Oh, yes.
Yeah, and we shared on your podcast that we learned about your podcast through my friend Becky. Shout out to Becky.
Yeah.
Hey, Becky.
And really, you know, it was an inspiration for us to start ours. So you really have been an inspiration for us. So thank you for that.
Yay.
And as individuals, I'm a travel advisor with Zell Travel. And I also am the co-founder of Our Family Vacations, which does LGBT vacations for families or people that just want to bring their extended families.
Right. The thing that I love about Our Family, just put out there, is you don't have to be, it could start with one gay couple and their kids or no kids, and then they bring their parents, and then they bring their sister who's straight and her husband and their kids, and it turns into this extended family. So it's not, you know, it's not all gay people that travel with them. That's what I love about it. It's what the world really looks like. It's, you know, a mix of all different types of people, and but everybody's safe and everybody's inclusive and everybody is supportive and loving, and that's why you know, Our Family has always been, you know, one of my favorite, even before we were a couple. I worked on her trips as a singer, and so I've always loved it. But for me, I am a singer-songwriter, and I have been touring for the last 10 years with my different, I have three albums that came out, and I've been doing that for 3 years. I'm not doing that currently, obviously, because can't, but I'm desperately looking forward to doing that again. And like I said, as you guys know, I was doing couch concerts at home for about 10 weeks. So that was feeding a little bit of my soul as far as performing, But also we were able to raise a lot of money to send meals to essential workers and healthcare workers, and also raise money for City Harvest, which we really believe in so much as a family. We volunteer a lot for them. So that's who we are and what we've been doing right now.
So you know you haven't been busy. It sounds like you've just been kind of sitting around and
What's so funny? Anne was saying that she was like, everybody else is binge watching TV shows, and why am I not able to binge watch TV shows? And I was like, well, you've been busy. Yeah. Not only would you do the concerts, but she was also calling in all the food orders, coordinating, you know, all of that happening. And I always make the joke that Anne never talks on the telephone.
Never.
Like if your phone is ringing and it's Anne on their phone, you answer because it's an emergency. Like, she hates to talk on the telephone. But I've never seen her talk on the telephone more than during this COVID lockdown. So yeah.
Nice. It's something new I'm trying.
The phone is like this new thing.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. Don't we all just text everything? I don't know.
Sort of. Yeah. Well, let's go back to, how did you guys first meet and how did you first spot one another?
I'm going to let you talk.
Oh,
I know, right? This is not normal.
She's going to interrupt. She's a better storyteller than I am. But so I originally met Anne. She was hired to work on my second Our Family Charter through the musical director that had been booking the talent for our trips. And
Seth Rudetsky,
I'm sure you know.
Name drop.
So she was performing on all of our trips, but now I was running a charter with 4,000 people on it. So, you know, I would walk by and I was like, you know, peek my head into the theater and I'd be like, wow, she's great and she's beautiful and just keep going. And that, you know, really... The truth is nobody knew that Anne was gay. So like, it was just Anne Steele performing on stage.
People knew.
No, nobody knew.
You didn't know.
I didn't know.
People knew.
But we actually, when she finally did sort of come out to everybody, we nicknamed her Lesby Anne.
/ Tan Anne. They used to call her Tan Anne. Very tan.
So she worked on all of our trips since then. And that's
since 2015.
Since 2005. Yes.
Ooh, wow.
We're aging ourselves.
You guys. Ew.
But we never spent any time together. We were both in other relationships. And finally, back in 2010, I did my very first group trip to Hawaii, and by a group, it was 200 people versus 4,000 people. So I had more time, and we hired Anne to sing on that trip. And we went to Hawaii together, and Greg, my business partner.
Wait, we were both single.
We're both single. Okay. Actually, yeah. Okay. We're both single. And Greg said, why don't you and Anne go scout out the beach that our group's going to hang out in? And so we went early to the beach. And we sat on the beach. We were there probably a couple hours before the guests were arriving. And we started to actually have a conversation. And she was funny and she was smart and all the things that are way more important to me than, I mean, look, she's beautiful and talented. That's amazing. But smart and funny were way up there on the list for me. And we just started talking. And all of a sudden, like, there was some chemistry there. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I've known her for so long, but never had taken the time to have those conversations that actually spark the chemistry. And so we dated for a while after that. I think neither of us were ready to commit for a while. Right. What would you say? Like,
well, she had 4 kids, you know,
and it's a big decision.
So as a parent, you want to be sure that something's real before you go any further, you know? So we kind of just dated from like March until, I would say like around August or September. Finally, we were like, yeah, okay.
So then I was like, you know, the kids already knew Anne because she worked on the ships.
Yeah.
So they already adored her. And, you know, going through a divorce, you don't want to break your kids' hearts twice. And I was like, I just want to be sure that you're going to be the one that we're going to go on this path with. And, it was so funny when I told the kids, they were like, yeah. And so Vivi runs upstairs. She was 7.
She was 7. Yeah.
Yeah. She's 17 now, but she ran upstairs and took all of my clothes and scooted them all to one side of the closet. And she was like, Anne's clothes are going to go here.
No,
and
I
was
like, we need room for Annie's clothes.
Annie's clothes.
She called me Annie. we need room for Annie's clothes. And I was like,
we got Annie.
I'm like, girl, slow down.
I was like, she's not moving to the suburbs yet, honey. That's going to take another level of convincing.
I'm like, I'm still a New York City girl. Back off. So yeah, it took a while.
So it was an instant family for Anne. And one of my friends said to me, you know, when you decide to go to that, to be in a relationship again, it has to be somebody that brings more joy to your house with your children than you already have. And did that and still does that. So, you know,
that's so beautiful.
The funny thing is I have to be honest with you. My mom would say this to this day. When I was a little kid, I would always be like, I'm not having kids. I'm not doing that. That's not for me. I was just going to go to New York and be a star, you know? And I was like, I don't have time for kids. It's not my thing. And I always said that my whole life. But as soon as we started dating and I already knew the kids, but when I fell in love with Kelly, it was falling in love with the whole family, honestly. And I never had a single moment of pause about joining a family like that. And what the commitment is to have four kids and what it means to, because it's not all about you anymore, right? It's about the family and the kids and the unit. And I never had a moment of pause. I have to be honest. It just felt right. Like once we took the time to sort of date and, you know, separately, because it was a divorced family, we had time, you know. And there were days where she didn't have the kids, so we had time to be together as a couple. And then even through the years, you know, it was week on, week off. So we'd have a week together as a couple. So it wasn't, you know, often when you marry into a family, you don't have time alone because there is no time alone. But we did have that. The things that were the scariest for her in a divorce is you don't have your kids all the time, which is frightening because that's all you have, you know, that's your life. But suddenly when you're starting a new relationship, it's kind of a gift. And we did have that time.
Yes.
And I cannot imagine my life without these kids. Each one of them is so different and so unique. And Vivi and Blake were still so little when we started dating, like 7 and 10. And the other kids were teens already. Well, Chelsea was like 12. But right. I mean, you know, they're little enough that Vivi, I don't know that she remembers all that much before I was there. So, you know, it's a bond that we have, and it's really the greatest gift, something I never expected. And it's really fantastic.
Yes.
Aww. And you're pretty close to being empty nesters at this moment, right?
Well, we're approximately 1 year from that. Not that we're counting.
Not that anybody's counting. No.
What? Well, wait. So going back to those times that you were alone, who said I love you first, and what?
Ooh, that would be Anne. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can tell you exactly when it happened.
Oh, that's good.
I remember exactly. We were on a cruise, actually. She was running a group on the Edge, was okay. The name of the ship. What line is that? Oh, no. It was the little pod.
The NCL. Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't the Edge. It was they have little pods that are sort of individual rooms, but we were sharing one, but we're really good at that. Like we can sleep in an inside cabin, like in a tiny little bed. We don't care.
We've done it 1 million times.
Yeah, we're fine. So it was like a little pod and we were in that room. And I remember like all of a sudden I was like, this was like in the fall.
Yes.
We had started dating in the spring and this was in the fall. And I just blurted it out. And then I was like, you don't have to say anything. And she was like, okay. .. nothing. And I was like, wow, that's so amazing that she didn't say anything. I'm so glad she feels comfortable just embracing what I said and not responding. It's so great. And I was like, oh my God, she didn't respond. And then I think
the next day
she said, I just wanted to let it sink in and feel it. And then the next day she said it back. And I was like, oh, you were on a short timeline, sister. So yeah, I remember that pretty well. I mean, you remember that, right?
Yes,
yeah.
I do.
That's how it happened, Kelly?
It's exactly how it happened.
Wait, also ask another question. Who kissed who first? Like who initiated the kiss? Okay. Also me. It's also Anne.
But it's actually a funny story because we were a group on a larger cruise ship. So it wasn't a gay charter. And I had Chelsea in my room.
So Chelsea was like 12.
and Anne had another Our Family team member in her room. And so all of a sudden there's like this sort of chemistry and like all this is happening. And Anne's like, well, can I walk you back to your room? And I was like, sure. And so
I'm pretty sure you said, can I walk you back to your room?
Probably.
Whatever.
So all of a sudden we're like looking at each other and it's in the hallway on this mainstream cruise.
Like we call it mainstream. Like it's a weird thing to say, but like just a general regular cruise. Like,
right.
Tons of straight people everywhere.
Yes. We've done those.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what that is.
And next thing I know, we're like making out in the hallway on the cruise ship.
And this guy just walks by in the hall and I'm like, hey, like we're just making out in the hall. And I'm like, is this weird for him? Because it's slightly weird for us, but I don't really care because we couldn't go into our room. So we were like, let's just, I don't care.
Yeah. So that's how the first kiss happened in a friendship
hallway. I love it.
It sort of was a beginning and telling of what our lives are going to be on cruise ships for the rest of our lives.
Just getting it in really quick and running away.
And then hiding. But now we have our own room, so we're good.
Yeah. Once you guys kind of became a blended family, what was there like a proposal and who proposed to who? And let's hear about your wedding too.
Well, you know, when gay marriage happened.
I hate gay marriage. When marriage equality passed.
Yes.
I hate the term gay marriage because it pisses me off. It's just, sorry, can I curse?
It should just be marriage.
When marriage equality passed.
There was no formal proposal. We knew that we wanted to get married. However, there were so many friends of ours that had been together for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And we wanted to, in some ways, be respectful of those relationships instead of the newness of ours in the beginning. And so we just sort of waited a year.
Wait, can we say really quickly that when marriage equality passed, we were in Provincetown and we were staying at...
That's when it passed in New York. Yeah.
When New York, we lived in New York at the time.
Right.
And when we were in Provincetown and we were at, we were watching it in our room, all of the C-SPAN stuff. We were watching every second of it. And we happened to be at the Harbor Lounge where our friend was working when it actually came through that it had passed. And we went crazy. We were so excited. It was just so fun to be in Provincetown because Massachusetts had already had it. Had marriage equality in Massachusetts, right? So they were like, big deal. And we're like, yeah, but we live in New York. You know, it's so exciting. And but then when DOMA was struck down, we were on an Our Family trip in Connecticut. What was the name of the
Club
place?
Getaway.
Club Getaway, which now there's a TV show about it. But we were in not about our trip, the straight stuff. We were in Club Getaway at a big, you know, gay family, Our Family trip. And we were all watching it. And they hung all these balloons. And when it passed, they dropped all these balloons on these families. It was people that were with their children that all of a sudden their marriage would be legal. It was the greatest feeling ever. We have these milestone moments with these families that I will never forget that and what it felt like.
When the Supreme Court one happened, you were with your mother in Indiana.
Yeah, that was also weird.
And I was getting my nails done.
I was with Vivi in Indiana.
Ramsey, New Jersey. It was very romantic.
I took Vivi to Indiana. My mother was a dance teacher, unknown to dance studio my whole life. And she was doing her recital. And so Vivi and I went. And it passed. And so I bought like the Indianapolis Star, the newspaper, and the New York Times. And I took a picture and I was like, okay, so this is a juxtaposition right here, right? And it was on both covers. And it was just like one of the coolest moments because I was in my home state, which, you know, Mike Pence is. So it's like that feeling was so amazing to be there. I would have rather been with Kelly, but I had Vivi and I had my mom and I don't know. It was a big moment.
But back to their original question.
Sorry,
about
back
proposal.
To, I just love those milestone moments.
I mean, it was we were together for all of them, which was very cool.
The breakthrough moments for us.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So
we were with the kids for all of them, which is sort of cool.
Back to marriage proposal. So
when did you? Yeah. So when did the two of you after? Right, so yeah. Everyone else got married because you're like
now we're allowed. Now we're allowed for them. Right.
And then you were
we attended a lot of weddings.
I'm sure you did. On cruises too, I'm sure.
Yes. Which was amazing because it was so great to celebrate our friends that, you know, had been together for so long and unable to get married. And it was just a very special experience. I think we waited maybe a year or
so. We got married June 1st, 2013.
Yes.
So
We decided to do it at our house in our backyard, and because we wanted to have sort of that family feel to it. And I think somehow we thought it would be easier. It definitely was not easier to have it in your backyard.
No. So you have to rent everything, right? But this was our house that we lived in before, and it had this beautiful sweeping, like, terraced backyard with, like, it was just beautiful, and a pool at the bottom. We built a bridge across the pool, and we got married on the pool, over the pool. And the greatest part is a friend of Kelly's, a long-term friend of Kelly's, that's an attorney. Her name is Lorna Schofield. She had just become the first Filipino woman. She was
appointed by
President Obama, and she sits on the Supreme Court in
New York.
But Southern District.
Southern District, yeah.
So you know what she's...
So we were her first wedding.
Yeah. So she was the first wedding, and it was a gay wedding, which was so exciting. And
I mean, the other cool thing that happened with our wedding is we, you know, it's right when the New York Times started taking, doing the gay weddings and their thing. So I was like, let's just submit and see if we can get a little box in the, you know, it'd be sort of fun.
At first I was like, is it weird? Because I've always looked at that wedding page and been like, oh, I wish there were gay weddings. And then all of a sudden they started doing it.
So we submitted.
Like, let's do it.
So we submitted, and the New York Times then called, and they're like, we want you to be our feature wedding. And so we had an entire,
a full page in the New York Times of our wedding. They sent it. We did it like a 3-hour interview with, and then they sent a photographer to our wedding. And
it was one of my least favorite articles about
anything. Yeah. I mean, they focused on
it
a lot.
It was fine. They focused too much on like some negative stuff that happened with my family that actually has resolved itself to be my parents are amazing. And they're amazing
negative
grandparents.
Stuff that when you were first coming out.
I was first coming out, and they didn't. They focused on that and then didn't resolve it at the end. So it looked like my parents were still, it really hurt my parents' feelings. And so I would say it was the most positive article, although I feel like it was a positive thing to show a gay wedding in that light in a lot of ways for people, but.
Like a full page in the New York Times. They never even used to put gay weddings on the page. So we did feel good about that. But yeah, it wasn't great the way they painted your parents. And,
right.
You know, what's so interesting. I mean, cause we're all kind of in media. But like we recently got asked about doing a reality show or something. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it was a similar thing where they interviewed us for this reality show. Not that we're like looking to be reality TV people. It was just like,
they asked
we'll
us
do
to
the interview.
Like, yeah, we'll interview.
Whatever. Yeah. And they literally were like, so tell us about your, you know, your marriage. Like, we're happy. We're healthy. We have these great things. Da, da, da. And they're like, is there anyone in your life that doesn't accept you? I'm like, no.
Was there a time
where they didn't? Would your mom maybe like? And they were just trying to like create these villains.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting. We were like, sorry, if that's what you're looking for, if that's
we're
the
not
story, like
that.
We don't have that story for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like there's no. And if you're going to bring up a challenge, which is fine to bring up the fact that I did have a lot, my family's very religious. I had a long path with my family, but at least have closure that shows the healing and the path that, you know, of who they are now, and not just leave it thinking that they're monsters. It just wasn't fair.
Yeah. And I think they didn't complete the story. And the truth is they didn't even ask about it in the interview. They Googled it and found the information from the past, and they included it in the article. And you don't get like to review with the New York Times. Yeah.
That's so gross.
Yeah. It wasn't great. But we did feel like it was amazing to have like a huge, you know.
And we just had our 7th wedding anniversary on June 1st.
Yeah, 2 days.
Congratulations.
We had a very exciting COVID date. We went to the drive-in movies.
Yeah.
That's fun.
We keep saying we want to do that. I keep looking it up and kind of obsessively looking at it, and then we haven't done it yet.
Can I tell you, we sang the music to Grease all the way there. We're like, straight to the drive-in, like all the way there.
It was fun. We got like a pizza to go, and we drove there, and it was a double feature, but the double feature didn't we're such nerds, didn't start till like 8:45. And the first movie was a Disney movie, and the second movie was Call of the Wild. I really wanted to see Call of the Wild, but we saw the Disney movie, and we were both bawling in the Disney movie. I was like, we must be so starved for like any sort of.
Well, have you seen the movie Onward? It's a Disney movie. It's about the kids that want to meet their dad that passed away. It's like at one point we were both bawling, and I'm like, we are ridiculous.
It was so ridiculous.
Yeah,
we saw before COVID in like the, what is it called, 4D?
Oh yeah,
it was in Times Square, and you sat in a chair, and it kind of like.
I was gonna say, you smelled stuff. Like what happened?
Yeah, smelled and sprayed
all of
stuff.
It.
But the movie was amazing. Yeah,
it is a good movie. Yeah,
it's a fun night out, and it's, you know,
a drive-in. I mean, like, that's so vintage. I love it.
You turn your radio station onto the right station, and it was fun.
Yeah. And you can keep your windows up or in your air conditioning. You don't even have to have bugs in your car. My mom was like, "Don't forget to take bug spray because you're gonna have to put that speaker on your window." I go, "Mom, it's 2020. We're not putting speakers on our windows." You know what I'm saying?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Wait, so you talked about Seth Rudetsky and the Our Family Cruises, and I know you have a lot of ties in Broadway and theater. What is your connection, and did you ever perform on Broadway or do musical theater, or is it just because of the cruises? How did that happen?
I did not perform on Broadway. I always wanted to, and I did, you know, pound the pavement for years when I first moved here. Right after college, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and I worked a lot in Nashville, but I was working in studios and I was doing demo work and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, no, I really want to be on stage. Like, all I want to do is be on stage. So I moved to New York and I spent years and years auditioning and doing all that. But I got a job at Don't Tell Mama. Piano bar. And that's how I made my money. That's how I paid my rent. And I truly believe that I became the singer and the entertainer that I am because of working on the spot, in the moment, in front of, you know, people that were all over the place. Like when I first started working there, it was no joke. Like people got dead silent. You could hear a pin drop. They made a recording of me, our old boss, Ming Pham, he recorded all of us and made little CDs for us that we could sell there. Probably totally illegal, but whatever. but you could hear a pin drop. Like people were obsessed, like lines down the street to get into Don't Tell Mama. It was crazy. And it was just a magical time in like piano bars and cabaret. And it was like a cool thing to do. And so I did spend years and years working there and honing sort of myself as an entertainer and developing how I wanted to be as an artist. And that I do think, and I auditioned again for years and years, never made it to Broadway, but I started to shift my focus and sort of create, I was like, you know what? I think I'm more of an artist in the way that I want to create my own path and my own reality. And so I started writing music and I started recording and releasing. And my first CD came out in 2010. And since then, I've had three come out. And I just kind of like shifted my focus and I decided, you know, you really have to want it so bad. You really do. It's a real calling to make it on Broadway. And I don't think that I had that fire like I thought I did but I do have the fire to perform and entertain. And so to find my own way and direction, I think that's something that's been able to sustain me. And I have the most amazing supportive wife. So I have to tell you what happened when I turned 40, right? My 40th birthday.
So you're 40? Yeah.
Yeah. My 40th birthday. I got, a bunch of, I was working in at Brandy's Piano Bar on the Upper East Side at Downtown Mama, where I'd always worked in Midtown. And, I decided, I got a gift to go to, what was the name of that restaurant?
Was it Babo?
No, that's
some
not it.
Fancy
restaurant. They gave me like a $500 gift card and it wasn't enough. Do you know what I'm saying? So, because the wine is like $300. So we sat at the bar and we had an amazing dinner and I started to cry because I was like, I just turned 40. I am unhappy with what I'm doing. I've never fulfilled the ultimate goal that I wanted. I had made one record at that point, but I was very, very, or two records maybe. I can't remember. It's been 6 years, guys. I'm 46.
Also, like vocally working at those bars is not
right.
Your friend.
It was getting hard. And, yeah. You know, so she said, all right, let's make a list. And this is the most support. I'm like, this is what partnership is, right? She said, let's make a list. Tell me the pros and the cons and what your goals are. And let's talk about what that looks like. And I said, I don't want to audition anymore. I'm done doing that. I want to focus on, my music. I want to write. I want to tour. I want to play shows everywhere. I want to make a living as this. I want to make a living as a singer, but as myself, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so she said, okay, so here's the deal. We made this big list and she said, all right, let's commit to something. We're going to imagine that the first year we're going to lose money, but we're going to commit to it. The second year we're going to break even. Cause she started a business before. It's like starting a business. I'm the business. Right. Yeah. And then she said, and now the third year we'll be making money. Now we started, that was 6 years ago and I've been touring ever since. I quit the piano bar, probably like a month later.
Yeah.
Never went back. And I've now released two CDs since then.
Until the virus hit, actively touring and performing on a lot of ships and not just, you know, LGBT charters, just regular ships. And
right.
Touring.
I got an agent for ship, yeah. Regular ships and regular mainstream ships, whatever you call it, boring ships. And so it took a commitment of a partner that said, okay, let's take the leap and let's do it.
What else to take somebody that, you know, I know nothing about the music world or the theater world, but what I can do is I stalked other people that were sort of what I imagined would be in Anne's caliber of launching a tour where they're performing. And I am relentless and annoying.
It's amazing.
It's either a quality or a quality you hate when you work with me, but,
no, you love it.
I knew that if I could just get her booked that they would rebook her, you know, cause she would deliver. Yeah. So yeah. I would get her booked at these venues. And of course, then she was asked back. And so then just became her regular annual tour and, you know, adding dates, finding new venues like in London. And it's just, you know, it's nice to be somebody to be able to support, to negotiate things that artists, I think, don't want to negotiate like money. And yeah. I think it's hard to sell yourself and negotiate money for yourself.
Yeah. So yeah. She's the most amazing manager. Let's call it.
Lucky. That's so nice.
My wife is her.
But only if I could sing back up, it would save us some money.
Oh,
but
she can't though, you guys. She can't.
Okay, the funniest thing is on her last concert, online concert, I was doing these things where I would play drag piano and drag guitar. Like I would go, piano is at Anne's back. And I don't have a musical bone in my body. But people were like, she was singing to piano tracks. But I'd go sit down and pretend like I'm playing. And people were like, Kelly, we had no idea that you could actually play that. I was like, you've known me for 20 years. it's a joke. But the last one I had to play tambourine. I also have no sense of rhythm and I clap on the offbeat. So I mean,
yeah, it would hurt your guys' soul.
It would hurt your soul. So she's singing and then you were singing Total Eclipse of the Heart. And there's that musical section where it's like, you know, all the big music goes and then it's tambourines.
Yeah.
I made Anne go on the other side of the computer and show me when to hit the tambourine.
It's the most awkward. It's the most awkward thing you've ever seen. I mean, it's.
I was like, amazing. I'm sorry, honey. I wish I had more musical inclination.
I can't wait to go on a cruise with you guys.
I know.
You're so fun.
You're so fun.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, with a lot of, I don't want to get too serious, but, you know, I want to touch upon, you know, what's going on in the world right now. You know, just with all of the inequality and racial issues happening. So I want to know, what are ways that you like to kind of segue the conversation or change the conversation?
Or call people out. When you hear homophobic or racist. Because I'm sure, especially if you're going on those mainstream cruises.
Yeah. What are...
Are there ways that you think people can be actively anti-racist, anti-homophobic?
Yeah.
And what are some ways you can do that?
Well, I have a family that's from Louisiana. Okay. So we had the rule and it's been in effect for many years that we don't talk politics or anything when we're together. However, it's becoming increasingly a bigger problem as the world is developed. I mean, this started back in the George Bush days. So I already had issues talking about politics then. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't now, I can't. And it's,
well, it's also, if you want to enjoy your time with your family, it's almost like if it comes up, it's going to ruin it. So, you know, you have to just personally with family, we just try not to.
Right.
However, it's coming up a little bit more with my family. And, you know, it's funny, my mom all of a sudden is initiating conversations. And although I feel my temperature rising and I feel, but she's at least initiating talking about it, that it's more my issue than her issue of being able to find a way to have a dialogue with her. And also the realistic idea that, you know, my parents are 80 and 75 and from Louisiana, born and bred Louisiana, privileged Louisiana, that not much is really going to change. However, I think that they do have the ability to maybe listen. As far as, you know, I find that the social media world has created like these insular little bubbles that we live in that I rarely see, and it's usually just my extended family that lives in Louisiana, that I see things that I completely disagree with. And I feel like for those of us that have that, it's our responsibility also to not agree with the other side of the story, but to hear what they believe and what their struggles are. And I'm not talking the racist piece, I'm more talking the Trump piece. See why they're in that world and what they feel like they're getting from him to be able to have an educated dialogue about it. I live in a bubble, and I feel like that's not the best way to have a conversation.
Can I tell you, my mother is the opposite. I almost have to tone her down. Like, she's so, like, she's way more even liberal than we are. Like, you know, I grew up in Indiana. She now lives here in Nyack, New York. So she's living her best life. But she is like, sometimes I have to tone her down because I'm like, Mom, I can't talk about it all the time, because she is obsessed with all of it. She's on it all. Like, our son just wrote and he wants to go to a protest, and we're very, you know, we're happy that he wants to go and be a part of it. But of course we're nervous, right? Because there's, you know, I mean, he's a Latino 20-year-old man. And so we're a little worried about him and also about anyone that's at a protest. You know, you never know how things could change and shift quickly.
Although protests, I mean, you and I have been to so many that this isn't about protesting. The protesters are doing a great job. New York City, nobody does a protest better than New York City.
I was like, we've done the Women's March. We've done
the tax march.
We've done so many marches in New York City, and they know how to do it and do it right and peacefully. It's just upsetting sort of what's happening right now.
But I feel like the dialogues,
the late night stuff that's happening.
Bringing up Blake, I feel like the dialogues that I feel like are more productive are with our kids, because it's a strange time to be a young person right now, and that you're looking at all of this happening and how they're going to react. And I think that it's up to us to guide them on, you know, what path. They don't have to believe exactly what you believe, but, you know, what the right way to express their feelings are. And, you know, I think that that's, I feel like that's where we can have be more productive than with, you know, my 80-year-old parents.
But we also have a 24-year-old son that's a Marine. So, you know, we have a lot of concerns about, I mean, the military is being called in to fight against our own people. Right. You know what I mean? It's like a scary, scary time for people in the military, even that they're going to be called in to fight against the American people. It's a weird, weird time. So that's a conversation too, and what that feels like. And, you know, so I don't know. It's, I think you proceed with kindness and, be gentle because, but hold true to your beliefs and, you know, stand up for what you believe in. Yeah. I had to unfriend a couple of Kelly's like extended family because no, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. We yeah. totally understand. Yeah.
But I do think what Kelly, what you said is true too. To come from a place of curiosity is really a powerful place to come from. When somebody says something, instead of judging them for saying it, maybe just saying, why do you believe that? Why do you feel that way? You know, maybe could give you a perspective to help shift it. You know?
We've lost the ability to have a conversation about anything political.
Yeah.
I mean, really anything at this point, like everybody's just so angry and divided. Uh-huh. And I don't know what's going to change to help that at this point, honestly, yeah. You know, because we're all got our feet in the, you know, including me. I'm, you know, like I need to be more curious. I need to be more understanding of, you know, was there financial scares? Was there like, why, what did he promise you that you feel like he's still delivering on? Like, that's what mm-hmm. I don't understand. I get, right. I get mm-hmm. the voting for him. I, you know, of course I didn't, but I get the dream that something was going to be different, but you know, why now? Like when you look mm-hmm. at the disaster of what's happening, you know, yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. I think that's yes. really, I think we have to address it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's in the air. Yeah. So thank you for addressing that.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to shift gears a little bit and we're going to go into a segment we call Spotlight on Love.
Exciting. You guys are so perfectly matched. You haven't rehearsed this at all.
We have to find thirds and sing it in thirds. Anyway, we...
That's not happening in our house, just so you know.
Yeah, ever.
One. Okay, so we have someone, a follower, write in for some relationship, love, dating advice, maybe family advice, any sort of relationship advice. And we offer, and our guests offer completely unqualified advice in response. So we had someone write in. Do we have a name for this person, Steven, or no?
I didn't put it in. Okay. It's yeah, so it's not
okay.
We don't have to.
So we anonymous. Usually try Let's to keep it anonymous just in case it's dangerous, but this doesn't seem too
it's not, edgy.
Yeah, it's not too edgy. It's okay.
Okay. So
he says, "Oh, I have a question. How to optimize communication when one partner isn't as emotionally emotive as the other?"
Go ahead, Anne.
Is this directly to us, or are you going to answer it?
You answer first, and then
okay. Okay. Well, I would say I'm more emotionally emotive than she is. So how do we communicate? The truth is we don't fight. We are pretty great at communication. Honestly, I mean, we have had a couple fights. We've been together 10 years. We've had probably
four big fights
in 10 years. So we're pretty good at communicating. I know that the way I like to process feelings is I like to step away. I don't like to talk it out in the moment. I need to go away and think about it because I don't want to say something I'm going to regret. Or say something I can't take back. And I feel like to decompress a little bit is better for me. Now, Kelly, on the other hand,
I feel a need to discuss in the moment because it feels intolerable to me not to address it. So I think that, you know, it's funny because of those four fights, two or three of them were in the very beginning of our relationship. And I think it was because the non-realization that we both need to hash it out in different ways. And the ability to acknowledge that and for me to sit with the intolerable and for Anne to know that I'm going to need to talk about it sooner than later, I think was a huge piece in learning how to communicate. And it also has salvaged us from fighting further, you know, like having huge blowouts because neither is able to accommodate. And we do process it very differently. And it's just, where do you find that middle ground?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think middle ground is the key.
Yeah.
That's good.
That is good. Well,
it's, we never fight either.
Well, no, that's not true.
We never fight.
That's not true. But it's interesting because I feel like Brett is more emotionally emotive, but he also has the trait of Kelly wanting to talk it out instantly, whereas I'm less emotionally emotive is how this person's putting it. And I definitely like to kind of hold back. I do the same thing, like I hold back. But I think, you know, like in any relationship, it's kind of like a learning. It's like a learning curve on how we relate to one another. And I think in the beginning, Brett would want, I always joke about this now because one of the first times, this wasn't a fight, but this is like the first time Brett wanted to talk to me. And he said, we need to talk. And I said, oh God. And so in the beginning, I was like, oh my God, he's gonna break up with me. This is over. Like, so I was always like instantly like, what did I do wrong? Oh God, it's all my fault. But you know, the first turning point or upset moment was like, I kept getting into bed and like, you know, not turning the lights off, you know, just kind of like just running like, okay, good night. And he would have to like do everything. And he had this conversation with me. And he was like, you know, I need you to take initiative. And so now I always laugh because every time I hear the word initiative, I think of that.
No matter where we are.
And he wasn't just talking about the lights. There were some other things that were happening. And I think instantly I just felt like I wasn't good enough. I wasn't holding up my part. But like for me, it was like it's been a long journey of learning that we're in this together and we love each other. And just because he has feelings towards me, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm doing something wrong. It's just, right, there's something that I need to hear, you know, and like we need to figure out how to move through that. So that's taken me a long time not to instantly get, oh my God, you hate me. What did I do? Like, you know.
Like, I think you just figured all of that out in quarantine.
Wait, I thought you were emotionally emotive.
It's interesting because when we first started dating, I had gone through therapy for years and to deal with similar family issues that Kelly has. So I had learned a lot of those communication tools in therapy, and I would just try to apply them in my relationship. And usually those conversations would happen after a session with my therapist.
Yeah. And like whenever he was like, well, I had therapy today, I was like, oh no.
Here we go.
Well, I also think that like the longer you're in a relationship, you realize that this is where your forever place is going to be. So then you were like, oh, great, we got to figure out a way that when we are mad, how are we going to do it? And how are we going to do it that it's not the ending and it's just, you know, just a bump.
And there's also, I think like there are little things that build up. And I think talking about them in the moment is maybe better. Like, I don't want to, like, if we have a massive issue and it blows up, that's when I retreat a little bit and she comes forward and then it's like, not good. But little moments like the sponge in the sink, for example, I hate to bring this up, but when I first joined the family, everyone would leave the sponge in the sink. And the thing with the sponge in the sink is it gets gross. So it's smelly and then no one wants to, and then you touch it and then you have sponge hand. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that is something that still to this day, when it happens, I'm like, sponge in the sink. Like, I have to address it immediately, right? Like, that's not a massive blowout, but I'll address that. Right, like a little more. But if I hold on to sponge in the sink and I don't say it when it happens and it goes on 10 days in a row and now I'm pissed that the sponge is again in the sink. Do you know what I mean? So little things like that, I feel like you have to go little moments, you have to share immediately because the buildup of that, then you go off about something else. Like, you know, she'll be like, hey, could you get that thing off the couch? And I'm like, what about the sponge in the sink? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then it's bad.
And you've got to release a single. It's your next hit, Sponge in the Sink.
Sponge in the Sink.
It's like an angry rock anthem.
I mean, I mean, I could write it. Trust me. I've already written it.
She's written it in her head 800 times.
But like the little things, you got to let that stuff out quickly and don't hold on to it because it's not worth it.
Totally.
Amen.
Lesson learned, sponge in the sink.
Well, to our listeners, if you want relationship and dating advice from our completely unqualified selves, DM us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands or shoot us an email at BroadwayHusbands.com and we just might choose your question in the next episode. All right. So we have to send a huge thank you to our guest, Anne and Kelly. Thank you for coming on our podcast.
Thank you so much for being here.
We are such fans.
Yeah.
We cannot wait to get to see you in person.
Yes.
And maybe on a cruise.
Yes. Yes, please.
Yes.
I'm going to sing with you. It's karaoke night.
I can't wait. No, it's duet time on stage.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm down.
Okay.
And to everyone listening, don't forget to love who you love.
And love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.